Welcome to the Conservation Is podcast, a Conservation Chat UK production. This is the place where we start the conversation about all things conservation and share them with our listeners. You can join in and interact with us using the hashtag Conservation Is and the hashtag Conservation Chat UK. Let's start the conversation. Okay, and welcome to the first episode ever of Conservation Is by Conservation Chat UK. I'm your host, Laura, and I'm here with Stuart, our co-host. We're the co-founders of Conservation Chat UK, and we've got a very special guest today, Abby. Can you introduce yourself, Abby?
Thank you for having me. My name's Abby, and I am an independent filmmaker currently in Devon, and I am making a documentary about wolves and the possibility of them being reintroduced back into the UK and public perception.
So on that note, that's a perfect way to introduce our first ever topic on Conservation Is, which is rewilding. And rewilding at the moment is very much a buzzword, and it's flying around the internet and magazines and all sorts like a hurricane. And it's something actually that's very close to our hearts. So we basically just wanted to have a casual chat about it, our opinion, what we believe, what we know, the science, etc., etc. And I don't know, maybe put the world to rights a little bit. So I just want to ask you first of all, Stuart, what is rewilding to you?
Tough question, because a lot of people don't know what rewilding is because there's so many definitions. To me though, originally rewilding was reintroducing extinct species. And I was somewhat sceptical about that because I was thinking beavers aren't really endangered, so why should we focus on reintroducing beavers, for example, when there's lots of things we already have, Scottish wildcats and so on, that we can already protect. But as I've looked more into it, it's more about restoring habitats, restoration of our lands, our forests, our wetlands, our peat bogs and so on. And sort of getting back to where we were a couple of hundred years ago when actually wildlife was thriving within the country.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I've come to kind of realise in more recent times, is it very much was, let's bring back wolves, let's bring back lynx, let's bring back bison. However, the UK is, this might be a bit of a strong word, but I like to describe it as a sterile country. There's not much wild land left. I mean, you go up to Scotland and you know, the world's your oyster. But apart from that, really, it's the majority is farmland. We've deforested the UK to a point where we wouldn't successfully introduce any of those top predatory species or grazers, because we haven't built it from the ground up. We haven't built that foundation for those animals to succeed from.
We've gone so long without these animals in our environment, and we're accustomed to this. We don't actually know what a wild habitat looks like. For example, Google Earth, we will see a patchwork of green, beautiful fields, and we think that's normal. And we see butterflies, we see birds, we see wildlife. We do. Mm-hmm. We do go out and we see wildlife, but actually we think that's normal. But in actual fact, we should be seeing so much more than that. So I think because we've come away from that, and you know, you're talking hundreds of years, mm-hmm. we have grown accustomed to this way of living. So we don't know what a real wild habitat looks like. Yeah. And that is the problem, because we don't think we need change.
Yeah.
And I think just in addition to that, when you say we're quite a barren land, it's quite some staggering statistics. If you look at forest cover in the world, so if you exclude the ice and the sand deserts, about 33% of the planet, and obviously the oceans, is actually tree cover. In Europe, it's slightly higher than that. It's around 38% is tree cover in Europe. And then when you take the UK alone, we've only got about 10 to 13%, which is actually trees. So we are quite stagnant compared to the rest of the world, plus Europe.
Just going back to what you just said, Abby, is when you look at Google Maps, and actually I did this the other day, I was trying to find out a way to get to somewhere for work, and I was looking at Google Maps and I thought, oh, that's a lovely bit of tree cover there. However, it's totally segregated from that other nice bit of tree cover from this big empty field. And I just think you know, one of the, I've just recently finished a degree in animal conservation science, and one of the main points that came up time and time and time again is building corridors. Fragmentation is probably one of the biggest causes for a lot of biodiversity loss, because you may have, for example, a really healthy population of tigers somewhere, and there may be another really healthy population of tigers another place that isn't too far away, but those two populations of tigers are completely segregated because they cannot access each other. So both populations of tigers are suffering population losses, and they're going extinct because they cannot physically reach each other to breed, mate, reproduce, because we have basically taken away that corridor that was required for them to access each other. Okay, so let's move on. What about beavers? I know you know a little bit about beavers, Stu.
I think beavers are an interesting one. Obviously, they've not been in our country for centuries. And what I alluded to before, I'm like, are beavers actually endangered throughout their range? Obviously, there's threats towards them, but they're thriving in certain areas. So I was originally quite sceptical about bringing back beavers to England. You know, we can't really look after what we've got. So how can we reintroduce these animals when there's so many other things which are endangered? But then as I looked into it more, I started realising, well, actually, beavers are what they call ecosystem engineers. So if we reintroduce beavers, you know, it's not necessarily for the sake of the beaver. We know they're thriving elsewhere. But what we see more invertebrates, we see more wetlands, we see more amphibians. If we get more amphibians, we then see more grass snakes, we get more birds and so on. So I think from that point of view, I've really been converted. We've seen some successful reintroductions in Devon, also in Scotland. But on the other side of Scotland, on Tayside, we've seen some of the negative sides where they're sort of being persecuted because the reintroduction weren't managed as such. It was sort of a rogue reintroduction, which is probably one of the conflicts with reintroducing these animals.
Yeah, so would you say that one of the big barriers behind rewilding a lot of these species, for example, or even maybe plant species, I mean, plants aren't my forte, but I feel from what I know and what I've learned and come into contact with is 9 times out of 10, it's very hard to sell rewilding because it always impacts people. On the ground. So, for example, farmers. You need to get the locals and the farmers and whoever's involved, basically, whoever is affected in the area where the animal's going to be introduced.
Well, with beavers, for example, there was lots of stories about, oh, beavers will eat the fish, and of course they don't eat fish. So it's sort of that reconnection with nature, with rewilding, and with these species that we used to live alongside.
Yeah, and don't you think that through rewilding, we could build that connection? Because everything's so urbanised now, we're very lucky that we live in a very, you know, natural environment. We've got the sea and we've got forest near us. But those who live in cities, they're so segregated from nature now that they haven't got that connection with it anymore.
I think there's this deep sense of injustice when it comes to the people that are actually impacted when it comes to reintroducing any type of predator back into the environment. It's all very well for us to sit here and say, okay, well, this needs to happen because, you know, this is going to happen with the environment. It's all positive and everyone's going to benefit. But actually, we do obviously directly have that effect, but we're not actually impacted. We don't have to go through the dramatic change. So when it comes to, let's just look at farmers, and I'm talking about my experience of wolves and reintroducing wolves back into the environment. Yes, you may have some funding, they will be compensated, and certain campaigns and things will be put into place for them, but it's still a massive life change that we will not have to suffer. It has to be, and I hate to say the word, but the word burden does come into it. I think that the region or even the country, we all have to share that. We all have to have that responsibility, because when the farming community or just landowners even, when they have to take that on themselves, they are going to have, again, that deep sense of injustice, that resentment. It's not going to work. So we have to find a way of being able to share that burden. And I don't mean to make it sound negative, but any change is going to feel like a burden. They still have to change something, and they don't want to do that. This, any type of reintroduction is not going to happen unless we all take that responsibility. And that's something that we don't do because it doesn't directly affect us. And
I think some of the problems in the UK as well is just land ownership. So much of the land is actually owned by an individual or a corporation. So there's not much public land there. But I also think the issue in terms of farming is people's livelihoods are at stake. But actually, is the livelihoods being affected by rewilding and nature, or is it being affected by the fact that we want a pint of milk for 30p or a kilo of carrots for 55p? I've tried to grow carrots myself, and I could not grow a kilo of carrots for 50p.
Yeah, I've worked on a veg farm. I've seen the amount of work that goes into that, and how much time, effort and manual labour that goes into not just producing but picking, you know, distributing those vegetables. And you can, like, we're not here to condemn farmers whatsoever. I mean, the whole purpose behind Conservation Chat UK is to join people together, get the conversation going and unite everyone in the same cause to make the world a greener, more, I suppose, valuable place, because it is turning into a desert.
And
we are eradicating a lot of species, a lot of plants, a lot of biodiversity that is vital to our survival at the top of the food chain. Because once you take something out from the bottom, the web's going to unravel and ultimately we are going to suffer. And I think we are starting to see the ramifications of that.
And I just think with farming as well, a bit like any industry, there's the good, the bad and the ugly. And actually, some of the best farmers are also some of the best conservationists as well.
So what are the benefits of rewilding? Better food, better water, better homes even. But actually, it's about, you know, rewilding yourself. We don't have a connection with nature. As I said before, it's almost like the nation, we're almost biophobic because we've been without these animals for so long and without this type of environment. So we don't actually understand the benefits from it because we've never experienced it. So it's very difficult to communicate to someone the benefits of rewilding when they've never actually experienced that. People do, in actual fact, benefit from just being out in nature, even for 5 minutes. It's hard for us to grasp that because we've never experienced it. So how can we possibly want that when we don't know? We can't want what we don't know. And that I think is part of the problem.
I mean, as someone who, obviously, I care deeply about the planet, conservation, animals, whether it's wild or domestic. I've always had that as part of my person, as part of my being. But that is, I think, attributed to my Nana was deeply caring about nature. She used to talk to the birds in the garden. And rescue strays and all sorts. My mum and dad, very in touch with nature, always used to take us out into nature. We were never, you know, plonked in front of the television, for example. We were always taken out on walks in the countryside. Very fortunate, very, very fortunate upbringing. And I think that's why I am so caring about it, because I was exposed to it. However, someone who grew up in a city, for example, like, for example, my cousins grew up in Birmingham and they didn't really have that. They didn't have the seaside on their doorstep. They don't really have any woodland, moorland, meadows. They didn't have that childhood connection. And that's a really important time to build those bonds with nature when you're so young and pure and you're interested. And because I suppose they didn't have that, they're not so interested in that. And it's always like a lot of, I suppose zoos will say, it's always about getting the red light people engaged, because you can preach to the converted all you want, but it's only until you get people who don't care so much to care, that's when you've really won the battle.
Yeah, and I think I grew up in an urban area in Greater Manchester, and I can remember when I was young, you'd go to any pond, stream, lake, and you'd be able to catch frogs, and it'd be thick with amphibians. a couple of years ago, myself and some colleagues were testing for chytrid fungus in the UK. Mm-hmm. And pretty much every stream's empty. You can't find these frogs anymore. But I think one of the dangers is we often think of nature to the state that it was at when we were children.
Yeah, within the past 10 to 20 years.
I think rewilding needs to go much, much further to actually when
we were
seeing these real ecological benefits. So I think them ecological benefits are clear. There's lots and lots of good science about that. But actually there's more research, more and more research. I don't want to go into it too much because I'm not a doctor. But looking at the mental health aspects, the access to nature and so on. And I think that's a really key benefit of rewilding, just getting people out. But perhaps one of the most serious ones as well, and the government's, again, where I grew up, just declared a climate emergency, but the government seems really keen now to declare these climate emergencies. And I think rewilding has such a benefit of keeping carbon in the ground, so restoring trees, protecting and restoring the peat bogs and so on.
So how about, let's talk about for example, a species or a rewilding project that's gone well and has really been successful. So I know of a few. So for example, there's the wild boar. The Forest of Dean?
Forest of Dean, yeah.
So the wild boar have been successfully introduced to the Forest of Dean, they're doing really well, aren't they?
Although there's still conflicts with people with that, yeah.
So they are fenced off, aren't they? They're fenced off within the Forest of Dean, so you know they can only travel so far. But they are doing well. They're flourishing. They're breeding well. And is the land recovering?
Well, I think it's just, you know, boars are doing what they've always done. They're uprooting things, rooting around, and promoting obviously growth. But if you live in that area, we'd love to hear from you and your opinion. So drop us an email at conservationchat@outlook.com. Because obviously we're not based in the area, so if you've got any stories about the boars, whether it be good or bad, we'd love to hear from them. But anything what just churns that soil over and reroutes things, it's the way nature intended, really.
We know one of the scientists who worked on the rewilding of this species in the Forest of Dean, and he was showing us some photographs. So, you know, these boar basically tore up some kind of urban grassland, didn't they? They got into some kind of, I think they escaped.
Yeah, but it looked more like badgers what had done that. There's this persecution towards the boars.
This, you know, it's something new. And like you were saying, Abby, people don't like change. And I think people want it, but it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to, I don't know, get into that unknown territory. But from a personal point of view, I feel like the unknown can be so exciting, and you just never know what's on the other end. I mean, there's also other species. There's pine martins in Wales, really successfully.
They're doing really well, and the Vincent Wildlife Trust played a key part in them. So there were some pine martins found in Wales, and when they did genetic trials, they actually turned out that the DNA related to pine martins in Scotland. But actually, they used to thrive in the area, so I know they've done some really good work. So maybe check out the Vincent Wildlife Trust website.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, they've done a lot about getting the public involved, looking at the benefits of the species. And again, if you put a wild animal in the habitat that it should be, then it's going to restore itself quite effectively.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter what animal you're looking at. If you think, ecologically speaking, if you're going to place, let's say, a keystone species back into an environment, we know science doesn't lie. We have the evidence. We know that actually that environment is going to thrive. Eventually, gradually, it's going to regenerate. It's always a political or a social challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That is always what we're up against. As I said, that environment will thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just giving it time, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's just giving it time.
I think this is one of the things of rewilding. We can breed and introduce species to our heart's content, but until we step back mm-hmm. and let things go and just let nature take back what's hers or his, whichever way you want to look at it, Mother Nature
mm-hmm.
takes back. And it will just work.
It will.
If you just take, say, a field, an empty field, and just leave it, nature will take it back and it will grow.
Mm-hmm. But do you think there's...
people won't. That's the thing.
No. Well, I was going to say, do you think there's a public and political appetite for rewilding? Do the public want it? Do politicians want it?
Yeah. I think that, politically speaking, rewilding is very scary, isn't it? It's very threatening.
I think people, when they hear rewilding, they automatically think, oh my God, am I going to have to walk around with a gun at night because I'm going to get eaten by a bear?
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
The kind of, for want of a better term, the common Joe is thinking when we
it's
say rewilding.
It's taken to the extreme, isn't it?
But actually, when I think rewilding, I think flower meadows. Mm-hmm. I think bees and bugs and butterflies. And then on top of that, I think small mammals, birds, amphibians, wetlands, reintroduction, or just letting... natural species are already in the environment but maybe not doing so well because we're suppressing their ability to do well, letting them do their thing, leaving them be, stop building on top of their land, stop, you know, digging things up, stop sterilizing with pesticides, just let things be and it will come.
Yeah, and I think if you think we have been picking away at ecology now for hundreds and hundreds of years, and surely we have an obligation now. How do we justify eradicating a whole species, not just one, zillions, and allowing this to happen, not doing anything about it? I mean, surely there has to come a point where we say, actually, and looking at the devastation that leaves behind, surely we have to do something about this.
Yeah.
It seems like a really simple solution to a lot of problems. Mm. So if you went to one of our politicians in the Parliament of the UK and you said to them, if we rewild the UK, if we let nature come back, we reintroduce green spaces, and I mean a lot of them. I mean, I'm not saying that start tearing down houses and replace them back with green spaces, but what we've got available to us, let that go back to nature. That would allow people to get into nature. That would mean that mental health would be better, less money and less strain would be put on the NHS, less people struggling for money, because maybe, just maybe, the inspiration would come to do what they want with their lives, really strive for their passion. Because I know that's something that really works for me, is if I go and sit on the beach for 10, 15 minutes, inspiration just starts flowing and I feel like my cogs start churning and the juices start flowing and I get my inspiration and I start to get really clear about what I want with my life, and my mental health just feels better. And also climate change. More trees, less CO2, less climate emergency.
It's interesting you say that, though. With the government, it set itself a tree planting target to restore habitats to combat climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And the UK government missed its target by how much? How much do you think it missed it by?
Oh, was it over 50%?
71%.
Yeah.
So I think some of these things, when we look at politics, politicians will often say something, but unfortunately, it's a 5-year cycle before we might have a new prime minister.
Yeah.
Where I think when you look at habitat restoration and conservation, you know, you're talking decades, you're talking centuries, you're talking about future generations. So I think sometimes the political will's not there. For example, in Manchester, you know, let's declare a climate emergency but still build on the peatlands. But I think sometimes the political will doesn't matter if the public will's growing. Because politicians will do ultimately what wins them votes. And if the public start getting on board with this, which they are, and we've seen this with the climate emergency, with Extinction Rebellion, but sort of once you start educating the public that rewilding's not your dog being eaten by a wolf, but actually it's about restoring things how it was and reaping all the benefits, such as ecotourism, such as reduction in mental health and so on, I think the tide will definitely turn. And I think we're seeing that already.
Yeah, I mean, the UK is seen as a beautiful country, isn't it? But only once you, and it is a beautiful country, but only once you kind of, you know, get knee deep in the truth of kind of what we've done to our natural lands, and how, like as Stu said earlier, we've only got 13% tree cover. It can't be good. I mean,
rolling fields may look pretty, but actually they're not doing much for ecosystems, environmental issues, you know, here, there and everywhere. Okay, so
apex predators.
Let's talk about the lynx. This is something we've come into contact with a few times, yes, haven't we?
But
it's a juicy one, the lynx.
But it
definitely.
Again, it's a.
I mean, we almost had an accidental reintroduction of the lynx on Dartmoor. Was it a year or 2 years ago when one escaped?
Yeah. Are they really big predators?
They're no bigger than a Labrador, are they?
No.
Lynx, and forgive me because I don't know much about the lynx, but I know they're solitary. I know that they are ghosts of the forest, mm-hmm. and I know there's no attacks.
I don't think they're big enough.
Exactly.
They wouldn't take. They wouldn't have enough power to take you down.
So, if there are any attacks recorded, so forgive me again if I'm wrong, but if there are, they're going to be minimal. We all know the wolf is very controversial, so the lynx surely is the best alternative because the wolf is obviously pack creatures. The lynx is solitary.
Would you say that the lynx rather than the wolf would probably be less intimidating in a public view?
Definitely. So when it comes to public perception, attitudes are changing, definitely, but they haven't changed enough. I don't even want to say they haven't changed that much because they have changed a lot actually, but it's they haven't changed enough yet. If the wolf ever comes back, I think we're decades probably away from that.
Yeah.
I don't, and if that does happen in my lifetime, I think it's going to be very, very difficult and a very hard time for the wolf. The lynx, I think, is still going to be very difficult because, again, we're dealing with a top predator. We're not used to living alongside top predators, so it's still going to be difficult. But the lynx coming back instead of the wolf is going to be a far easier ride. There's going to be issues, there's going to be conflict, but I think in the words of George Monbiot, what is the point in not taking risks?
Mm-hmm.
What is the point? Because every single animal, every single species that's bigger than a rodent gets persecuted in some way or another. So, you know, for the sake of the environment, for the sake of us, for the sake of wildlife, for the sake of planet Earth, why not take that risk? And I think the lynx is a perfect alternative to the wolf. The wolf, definitely, this is going to happen one day, but why not? Let's get the lynx in now. I think the UK is ready for the lynx. Perfect alternative, definitely.
I think especially when you're talking about the Highlands of Scotland and so on, I think throughout wildlife conservation, we're always talking about managing a species. So deers eat trees, so we've got to shoot deers. But we never think about the full circle where if we put these apex predators back in, actually all the management can be taken out because they can do it themselves. Now, I know obviously there's going to be fear of landowners and pet keepers and farmers and so on, but surely the country is rich enough to put some sort of real value compensation scheme in. I don't think there's a threat to human life, and in terms of wildlife and livestock,
I honestly don't think that. I think if wolves or lynx were brought back, I don't think we'd ever come into contact with them. I don't think it would be an issue. Why would it? Wolves aren't going to be rummaging through your rubbish. But
wolves are so timid, they're so shy, and this is actually something that we've done. They are so shy, you won't see a wolf. Wherever wolves are in the world, they do bring certain problems. They do. If, for example, wolves are hunted in that area, they will be shot and that pack may disperse, and then you will find wolves can't bring down certain prey, so they will go for bins. They will go for something that's easier, like livestock, something that's, well, just easier.
Wouldn't you?
But you have to look at the bigger picture, and that's still a human problem that we're presenting to them. So we know then if it's a problem that we're bringing to them, we can manage it.
So I think in a minute, Abby, I'm going to ask you about your documentary. But
yeah,
if you do have any opinions, please join the conversation across social media using hashtag conservationchatuk. But really exciting news, Abby's been working on a documentary looking at rewilding or potential rewilding of the wolf. So if you want to just talk a little bit about what Lupine Media has been doing with it.
When I started my documentary, it was very much about wolf conservation, and that was followed by some experiences, should I say. I've always been interested in wolves. I was one of those 80s kids that, you know, watched Neverending Story, and I was obsessed with Gmork and the power of the wolf, and I loved werewolves. So I fell into the media, the sensationalism of the wolf. And then I started to watch a few documentaries, and I looked at, let's say, the real wolf.
Mm-hmm.
But I still didn't really understand. I just knew that I was very drawn to this creature. And then I visited via a animal rights organisation I was working with. I had to visit a zoo, and I came face to face with a pack of free wolves. And it did. I can honestly say it did change my life. And I really wanted to know more about wolf conservation and wolves in captivity and, you know, studying behaviour. How could the zoo justify having these wolves that roam so many miles but keeping them in such a small proximity?
Mm-hmm.
How can they research them? So I wanted to look more into that. What I found out, it really upset me, and I knew that I had to do more with this. Along the way, I met different people and I discovered rewilding. I knew that wolves obviously weren't here in the UK. I wanted to know why. I wanted to know the history. Why were they persecuted? Why were they removed? Wolves have been persecuted for hundreds and hundreds of years, and our relationship with the wolf is so, it's so unlike any other animal, actually. It's so unique because you've got this massive imbalance. You've got one side where the wolf is worshipped and, let's say, fluffified.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the other side where the wolf is villainized and hated. I knew that I had to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it started there for me. I wanted to bring that or investigate for myself and research, but bring that balance back. And that meant talking to various individuals, and that meant, you know, researching myself. And I have found out some amazing things along the way. But part of that, and the biggest part of that, was looking at wolves coming back to the UK. The wolf, in all its glory, as I said earlier, can bring back this balance,
mm-hmm.
and will bring back this balance. But it's going to take us to tolerate it taking from us, even if it just is a little bit. You have to remember that we have taken, one of the biggest threats to the wolf is obviously habitat destruction, which is, we all know, we have taken over most of the wolf's habitat. We have to be willing to allow this creature to take a little bit from us. We have to, in order to restore that balance and then reap the benefits. And at this point in time, we're not willing to do that. We're not.
I think we're really excited about the documentary as well. We've had some sneak previews as well. But if you want to know more about it, please check out Lupine Media on social media, and we'll keep sharing things as well. But I think we've talked a lot about the positives of rewilding, so it obviously seems a good thing, at least in our opinion. Please contact us if you think differently. So the question I want to ask next is, what actually is preventing rewilding? If there's all these positives, what's stopping us from doing it?
People that have experience reintroducing wolves back into the environment. I'm not talking for myself here. I'm talking people that have actually experienced that or are experiencing this. You have to go with sound evidence, sound experiences. Mm-hmm. This has happened. This is what may potentially happen for you.
You know, something I found actually is, I am, you know, a science lover. I love science and I love facts and statistics, and but there's only so much of that that the public will swallow. And for a real connection to be made with any species or any cause that you may have, and it doesn't even have to be rewilding, it can be anything, is you've got to have a story.
You've got to build a story that someone can connect to and someone can fall in love with. And without that, it's just numbers. So you've really... I actually had the fortunate encounter when I was at university to have a lecture by someone from the Devon Wildlife...
Wildlife Trust.
The Devon Wildlife Trust. And she was amazing. She actually storytells on the side. That's her on the side kind of hobby or job. I'm not sure whether she gets paid for it or not. But she tells stories. And I just remember sitting in this classroom for an hour and a half, just totally absorbed into every word she was saying about how they reintroduced this oyster to the rivers. I can't remember what part of the UK that she was dealing with now. But they'd reintroduced this really important oyster to the rivers there, and it completely purified the rivers, and that meant that other species could come back. And it was just the way that she was telling these stories. I mean, real life, conservation, ecology, biodiversity, rewilding stories. And she could have gone to anyone. It didn't have to be someone like me who's interested in conservation and all those kind of things. She could have gone to my dad or gone to... you know, some randomer down the pub and told that story, and they would have lapped it up and, you know, felt drawn to help because she was that connecting.
And it sort of shows as well that rewilding is not just about beavers or just about lynx. It's the small things that make a mega difference.
People forget the ugly little, ugly but very important species.
And I think that brings anyone listening into it as well. It's like anyone can have a part to play with rewilding. So I guess the question is, what can we all do to get involved in rewilding?
I think just from the comfort of your own home, the first thing you can do is just let a little bit, if you're fortunate to have a garden, just let a little bit go. Let the nettles come back, let the wildflowers come back, the butterflies, the caterpillars, the bugs, the bees, they will come. Or fill a pot with some lavender. Like, it can be so, so small. My mum and dad put in the tiniest little pond, literally the smallest little thing. It's barely anything. It's a water feature, actually. They've just had hundreds of little baby frogs born in it, and they've got also on the higher level... a couple of newts, a little pair of married newts in the top part. And it's just booming with life because they've just put it in and they've let it go.
I think that's the key as well. And Spring Watch raised a lot of awareness about their garden watch. So lots of gardens in the country, perhaps some of the most wild spaces are our gardens. So just think about what's in there, how you can help this. And again, we've done some blogs on our website, www.conservationchat.uk.com, where we're looking at about how you can rewild your garden, whether it's bat boxes, bird boxes, mats for slow worms, invertebrates and so on.
Compost heaps.
Yeah, I think sometimes we look and go, what's the government doing? What's this organisation doing? When actually we have a lot of this in our own hands, and the people can really make a difference by just doing what's on their doorstep.
I'm a great believer that the people on the bottom will do far more, far quicker than the people at the top. And I think if you're passionate enough and you really care, just maybe even just knock on a few people's doors and say, oh, you know, for example, you have hedgehogs in the area and you know that for a fact, just cut a few holes in the fences, obviously with your neighbour's permission, and then you'll allow that hedgehog traffic come through, and you might help the species breed and repopulate, because that's another species that, you know, we have got a fairly good population in the UK, but it is staggeringly less than it was.
It's decreasing and decreasing.
It's connecting the wildlife together. That's the issue. We do have it. It's not... you know, we don't want it all to be doom and gloom all the time. It's not completely lost. It's still there. We just need to connect it.
Yeah, just real simple stuff. An area for wildflowers, a pond is magnificent. Feeding the birds, putting a bath out for the birds.
A tree, a simple tree can be an ecosystem in itself.
Bug hotels. Also, get involved with community groups. Can you ask the council for a bit of local land where you can plant some trees? I mean, we desperately need trees in this country. Scout groups, schools, what are they doing to rewild themselves?
Additionally, whatever wild spaces you have, keep them clean, keep them free of pollution, of litter, because, you know, chemicals. Just, you know, the simple can ring pull could choke an animal to death. And if that, you know, happens on a regular basis, a population might seriously suffer. And yeah, things like chemicals, runoff, pesticides will, you know, take out invertebrates, which are the foundation of all ecosystems. I know a lot of people kind of don't like creepy crawlies so much, but they are integral, they're imperative to the health of our ecosystems.
They're bird food, they're frog food, they're hedgehog food, they're all the things we love food, so just for their sake.
Yeah, if you want hedgehogs, you need worms. If you want blackbirds, you need beetles. You know, it goes on and on and on.
Okay, so perhaps to end on quite a contentious issue, we're talking about releasing all these species, but often conservationists talk about having to control these species. So how do we sort of feel about having to control rewild species? If we have to shoot a wolf to control it, if we have to cull a beaver?
This is a very, very difficult question, but it's a really important one, because wolves will need to be managed. Wolves are great, really, to look at this question. Are you going to look at the individual or the species, long term or short term? They are going to eventually reach out into other areas. They are going to need to be relocated. If we're talking about the UK, they are going to extend the barriers. Of course they are. They're wolves and they're opportunists and they will do so. But you are going to have rogue wolves. You are going to have wolves that are going to cause problems. So you have to ask yourself, are you willing to let wolves be released into the environment and let the environment thrive and let wolves be wolves and do their job? Or are you going to say no, because the wolf will suffer? We know the wolf will suffer because we can't even live with foxes, for crying out loud. We can't even live with badgers, you know. They will be persecuted in some way, shape or form.
Again, it's quite a contentious issue. And what contentious issue? On one hand, I'm like, animal welfare, no, we should let them thrive. But realistically, when we talk about conservation, again, we're talking about that population. And I think throughout conservation within the UK, things are managed anyway. We manage deer so they don't eat all the young saplings and so on.
Mm.
We manage badgers because they allegedly pass on a disease which actually comes from cattle.
And it's not talked about though, is it? That's the thing. It's never talked about. We don't ever think about this. And if a wolf is brought back into the environment, think about how much life that wolf is going to give.
Hmm.
That wolf might be taken from the environment for whatever reason. And I'm just purely talking about rogue wolves here. They're only going to be a problem because we make them a problem.
Yeah.
This is down to attitude. This is down to fear. This is down to perception.
I mean, once upon a time in the UK, believe it or not, we had rhino, we had lions, we had bears. We had it all here. And that's why a lot of our vegetation is so tough and hardy, because it had to withstand rhinos and elephants.
Yeah, it's a temperate rainforest.
But what did we do? We hunted them to extinction. So is it a case of whatever we touch eventually disappears, or...?
Well, I think we can't look at Africa and say, you can't do this, when actually on our own doorstep, we're doing it, and if not doing it worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to lead by example, which the UK often does, and, you know, that stiff upper lip attitude, roll our sleeves up, and actually let's just get on with this rewilding. We know there's lots of benefits there. We know it's going to benefit the environment. Okay, there might be problems with some individuals, and we mentioned rogue species or rogue individuals, but I think we're all in agreement. They're only rogue because we've made them rogue. Where, yes, we don't want to see livestock lost, but again, we're a rich country, we can compensate for these things. There's a very, very low risk to life and people, but we exaggerate this. Wolves are bad, lynx are bad.
when we think about certain species being managed, straight away we think about culling. There's always alternatives. Everything is evolving. It's always moving. Nothing ever stands still in conservation. We will find other ways, so this won't be an argument anymore. This won't be an issue. You know, when it comes to the welfare of the wolf, the wolf will be able to come back and we can manage this in a way that is not going to impact or have the wolf suffer in any way, shape or form.
Okay, so I think that's all we've got time for today. Some really interesting stuff, and thank you very much to Stu and Abby for all their inputs. Please make sure to follow us on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube and our website. So at Facebook, we're Conservation Chat UK. That's also the same for Instagram. YouTube, again, we're Conservation Chat UK. Twitter, we are ConChat UK. And our website is www.conservationchatuk.com. And also make sure to join in the conversation and start a dialogue about this issue by using both of our hashtags, conservationis and the conservationchatuk hashtag. So thank you very much for listening, and make sure to join the conversation. It could just change the world.